This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Well, for example, I'm seeing mine as a message telephone call rather than as a metrical construction, as a rhythmic construction.
Yeah.
As Palmer pointed out to me, that what he liked in Powell and Caddis, which suddenly woke me up to the fact that that's what I had been doing all along, intending all along, without being aware of it.
So the opening of Caddis, for example, the rhythm, as a sign.
And I wasn't aware of doing that consciously. What I was aware of was either telling a story or explaining.
Well, sure, that's the whole point of thinking or learning anything about technique at all, that there isn't any way of having a message or conveying a message unless it's in the rhythm. I mean, you can't make that separation.
I think
you could have a message and or a rhythm.
An ideal, I think, whether message or the meaning or the significance or what you want to say or finally the feeling
is separable.
And the rhythm are one. The feeling and the words are one.
They're not separable.
Well, I had separated them, and I said I didn't know what.
Well, take, for example, Williams's sense. Alan told the story yesterday of his first visit to Williams. He had a piece of paper, which he just handed to you, and it had, I kick you in the eye, or
I kick your eye. Why are you waiting? I kick your eye.
I kick your eye. And he said,
I kick your eye. Why are you waiting? Yours. The New Jersey ad for yours.
Yeah. He was saying he could find nothing in existing metrical senses that provided for that statement in a poem. That there was no rhythm, or no rhythm structure that had yet been used that allowed that to be said in a poem.
Or else, in a way, he wasn't smart enough to put it into
But he didn't read that way. No. He could feel nothing of that in any poem that he'd read, as a possibility. So this was his concern. Also your sense of the speech that he had. Someone with Phyllis Webb was asking Alan yesterday about the whole issue of his line, technically, and asking how this had been stimulated by the Williams. And as Alan pointed out, it was what Williams discovered for Alan was simply that you could write, or a poem could be, in the rhythms of the speech, could be said, like that statement, or any other statement. Then came the question of how one was speaking at that time. And as Alan said, he was in a boxed, locked circumstance that created an hysteria in himself and an anger, so that his line literally went into that physiological character, began to not echo, but was spoken in that reach.
Sort of as an incantation to wake up my own body.
Yeah. Which is not...
By having pronounced it like that, I have to move my whole body.
Well, for example, if we take that context and then put it back on the whole sense of Robert's sense of the psyche, we're speaking in various ways, I believe, of the whole issue, again, of literally being alive. The context of life as opposed to my life or his life, but life. In no generalizing sense at all. And Robert's sense of sometimes I am permitted to return, or my sense of it is hard going to the door cut so small in the wall where the vision, which echoes loneliness, brings the scent of wildflowers in the wood, so that you... I can't say that. You see, at the time you were speaking, the sense, I equally, again putting this back upon the whole issue, I had no right to say that. I personally had nothing to say. Because when one says that, you're saying something that is only... that is always, and always only, not merely, simply what can be said then. I didn't, in other words, I had no proposal to make other than that, than what I said. And I'm curious, I am persistently curious to know how does one get there, and then we get back to that issue of there and here.
Yeah.
It's funny, like Alice in Wonderland, when you step through the mirror, do you step through the mirror? How can you step through the mirror? You're suddenly there, and your there turns out to be here. Isn't there a point? Yeah.
Were you saying that you used part of the
I didn't know I was doing that, but that's what was happening. But that is my sort of almost like a baby crying. My impulse was to have mola in whom I am a consciousness without a body, and to be able to sound that. And when I got up on that stage to read it, it all came back to me then. Or the feeling came back to me then, though even then I was, say, 4 years ago, I wasn't aware of it. I was crying for air.
I think Olson said that he had...
Without knowing. I think without knowing what it was, I was doing it, without knowing what I was doing.
The insistent return of the statement that he found in his reading, of, where it says, I, John Watts, testify that Morton, what, took salt that he said was his. And that becomes a place. Every time that comes up in his mind, he's literally... He's involved with the place. So, where, whose salt was it? How can this be dealt with? You see, I mean, how? And I, you know, if you go into other people's houses and if you're immoral as I am, and you read their mail,
who does?
Look at their clothes. You know, one time, my young son was sick, and we'd gone out, and this is when we were living in Mallorca. And Graves paid us a visit when we were gone, and my son reported. I said, "What did he do? You know, what did he say?" He simply gave me the message, and then he described what he did. He apparently went all through the house, looking at my books and looking, you know, because he wanted to
see,
you know, he wanted
the diary.
Yeah, you know, because what people tell you,
that's
you know,
really going on.
You have to inhabit people in this fashion. Not have to. I don't mean that you should beat them up or possess them. And,
can I try to recite a poem?
Yeah.
Misty, moisty morning, cold with the weather, there I met an old man dressed all in leather against wind and rain. And it was, how do you do, and how do you do again? Nursing her. I don't know what it means, but it's there.
It's here.
I've always believed that that old man on the Misty Morning Morning was the same man that's in Old Grimes Is Dead, that good old man.
No.
I always identified.
A poor old Tom Piney died last.
All buttoned down before.
Wherever did that page from that? Was that a child's grammar?
No, it's not a grammar. It's a storybook.
Well, let me identify it briefly. One time in the Black Mountain Review, we printed a page that had the oddest syntax. I mean, literally, the order of the words.
I am to go up
to be by it.
To be by it. An ox.
Yes, an ox.
An ox to be by it.
I am to go up to be by it.
I think it may have come from a reader, and then in the book that I have, it had completely different typeface from all the other things in the book, and there were some other things that had different...
Yeah.
They must have collected things and just...
Was this as instruction for the child?
No, it was a storybook, and suddenly in the middle, this page appeared.
Lovely page. And you can never be, quote, no place in a poem. You're always there. Here. Yeah.
These people are people of the poem. If you take the full risk by referring to the poem, the fact that that old man exists for everybody who in childhood has him. What I left out myself the other evening was Mother Goose. How in the world did you really begin with Japanese poems? I mean, poems. This old man actually exists as a person of the poem, yet in the beginning, were you in the... This is where you met him, in a poem. See, he's in a poem that's a Mother Goose rhyme. Some of them are that anonymous that they don't even do a good job of dating them. Others of them have, as people work and work, trying to make them a poem and not the poem, get located enough that they say they're in this century, and they're really about that. The reason that nothing happens when they tell you this is really Queen Elizabeth is that when the froggy's still a wooing go, no matter who he is. I mean, that might be Philip of Spain. It's so uninteresting compared with the fact that the froggy would a wooing go. That while the original purpose of that poem was, as a satire, says the scholar, the poem became not a poem, but the poem, because Froggy wrote a Woolingo, and Froggy has existed ever since, and we find Froggy everywhere else, too.
Yes, and that is the answer to Alan.
Yeah.
Where you...
By the way...
You don't believe, or you don't know what the
yeah,
poem
yeah.
is.
It's the one we've all gone into.
And we ourselves have...
It's that which is shared. It's community.
Yeah, we have certain
feelings that
we have derived, and in this sense, poems, individual poems, have become the poem so that they're inseparable. They could be anonymous. They wouldn't make any difference. But the thing Lawrence belongs to the poem for me because he's inside... I mean, because I've derived being from him.
Well, then, by the poem, you mean the place that we all are here together?
No, because it's really, it's that little man in that verse, not we aren't.
It's the place we come together in.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Alan, maybe one reason you're disturbed is because you're the only person present who is a person of the poem. You see, you not only write poems and have within the poems things that belong to the poem, but you are also a person of the poem. Like Dame Meeta Sitwell is a person, or Dylan Thomas is a person of the poem. None of the rest of us are persons of the poem. See, Allen Ginsberg is an idea as if it were in a poem in the world. Now, none of the rest of us are even likely to be an idea in this sense. Because I've got an individual life that is entirely a different thing. Well, people say you're a legend, but to be a legend is to be a person of the poem just as much as... And as a matter of fact, anyone here can have this legendary person of what the poet is be in a poem and move around. And everybody, as a matter of fact, now, we know this is an almost a guarantee. Eliot sort of is a person of the poem because people have an image of him. Pound is not a person of the poem. Williams is not at all a person of the poem.
Robert,
individual. That's an individual thing. But I'm talking not about what's in Alan's poem, but what is in the world's dream.
Yes.
The image, the fact that anybody could live this way, break through for other people, but you see now what it is like being in a story. And so you said no, because it does usurp you. I mean,
that's why I was saying no, because it works out.
Yeah, it works out.
It
but I meant
in the end.
But do you understand at all that we are not people of the poem? Oh, that I certainly am not a person of the poem?
No, in a certain way, you are more than I, even.
I wonder, John, for example.
Whitman says this book touches a man.
Yeah,
but that was Whitman's book.
Whitman was a person of the poem, isn't that?
Yes, Whitman was very much a person of the poem. Great person of the poem, but Hardy isn't a person of the poem.
But
I'm trying to
Emily Dickinson.
For the person of the poem then to is it possible for the person me, the person of the poem or anybody who was involved in that? To then return with the poem and become a person identical with the poem, identical with the place, identical with we are all here. So that the feeling and the words are all one. So there's nothing like that.
The feeling and the words always are one. That's what Denise meant is that
well, maybe for her, but I don't know what I'm writing when I'm writing sometimes.
Well, then actually it is exactly at the level that you're registering. You can't register another word. Or do you mean you don't know what it means? No, I meant the other sense. I don't think knowing is in question here.
But it isn't in question at all. That the words and the what did you say? The words and the poem?
Yeah, the words and the rhythm.
The words.
The rhythm.
Our one is not a question of deliberation.
John?
Yeah, if anyone can't shake off the autonomy of the poem, just leave it, I think you're sort of in too much in it.
Oh.
Well, am I not taking it over?
No.
Go back to something that has nothing to do with it all. But when the poet did not precede the chorus writing its jump on the stage in the old Greek play, and he was eliminated finally, and it was woven into the play itself, this voice, so that he became the prologue within the play.
Well, here for example,
the sense of the mythology of the poet was lost, you see, and it remained only in the poetry. So that when the poetry builds this system of time, this almost ideal concrete state of time, the poet, if he knows it, he can just, it's just another crummy idea.
Well, listen to this.
He goes on and he's not a part of the poem at all, and if he is, well.
Here's Williams.
He shackled himself by the very damn thing that he's created, and anyone does that.
Let's get a parallel sense. Here's Williams in a section of this long poem, Journey to Love, where he's speaking to his wife. With your smiles and other trivia of that of the sort, my secret life has been made up. Some baby's life, which had been lost had I not intervened. But the words, made solely of air or less, that came to me out of the air and insisted on being written down, I regret most that there has come an end to them. For in spite of it all that I have brought on myself through that single image that I adore equally with you, and so it brought us together. That to me is the concept of the, that's the place. And that's the place.
You see, but it's the single image.
Yeah,
and the adoration of the single image.
Is it possible that we are all looking for the same place?
That we're all what?
That we're all looking for the same place.
But we're not talking about a place you're looking for, which
the place we are.
But the place, right? Yeah, the place where you are in the poem, the place where you are.
That painful sense of not being in the right place, when right and wrong become as they are species. Ultimately, you can only be where you are. But the sense of being in the wrong place, the right place, the feeling that there is some exclusion, either part of your literal self, e.g., when I look at things and realize stereoptic things, for example, I can't see. When I feel myself in some sense excluded by issue of myself, which is not anyone's fault or anyone's even intention, or else when there is intention, when all the complexities of that order, all the quote historical aspects of myself become preventions. But in the place where I am, there is always whoever is there. As the reading the poem about the Dr. Foster went to Gloucester, etc. I'm there, and he's here. We're both here. And I felt that apropos this issue that John brought up of having no sense of the others. At times that's an agony, because I want to be where I am in a poem very, very intensely, and I find myself there. As William says also in that poem, I cannot say that I have lived in hell, but I have often gone there by reason of his love.
But William talks in this particularly about the thing that came to him as he said out of the air.
Out
it
of
came
air.
To me. And it does seem to me that when your picture of the crisis of the poem is what's coming out of you, not what comes to you out of the air. See, when you express what happens, what it is that has the for you would be the trouble of the poem or the release of the poem, it is pretty much posed as if it were you that was the trouble and the release of the poem. But when William says it came out there, or the adoration of the thing seen, actually the poem is given to him out here, and happens when he's and there it happens when he himself can. Now here's where your feeling does come in. If you can't, it happens when you can receive the gift of the thing out there. And adoration is the way Williams does it. And but adoration, but anger is the way of receiving the gift. After all it really means is that you care. Every expression, damn you, is let me please exercise the remark.
Is inside where I stand out? I mean, is it inside and outside? I only say
no. I meant it. No, not inside and outside. Something. I'm talking about the what he says. Read again. What he says is the thing in the poem. See, Pound, for Pound, by the way, that remark Pound made recently about, and I'm going to risk this because he's quoted out of context by magazines that didn't, that only quote out of context and make as false an image as they can, but I could understand that he may very well have said this business about regretting what he wrote, Pound. That's because Pound's ideas are at times, he thinks, the important thing. And in that movie, he'll tell us what these ideas are. And yet, the thing in Pound are those images. The thing in the Pound are the things you see in that. And for instance, that he gave us Confucius, that he was an agency for Confucius, is major. But I'm talking about for me, in the Pound. Whereas Pound's ideas, I entertain as you would sit and entertain. All right, so the shaman has to go through that. I know he scratches his ear in between time, and that he's going to really want to talk about this. It's a difficulty that he has. Or when I really have more faith, then I want to go into a psychoanalysis to find out how really that gave me anything. But much of the candles you don't have to at all, and so there are the ships sailing. You see, that's what I mean about this question of psyche. It really is the there-ness of ships sailing. It isn't something about, this isn't a revelation about Pound, it's we're again on that ship that sets sail, where these souls set sail, and again we are with Ulysses, who is the person of the poem. Again we're with Ulysses, again we come to Circe's island, again we, and that's the world of the poem, isn't it?
When you read the other day, your reading, you had one very short, not uncharacteristic, but one little building block in the whole evening, which was a poem of myself standing on the highway.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I was wondering what you think of that. I like that.
Yeah, I like it as a poem. But for instance, a poem is very different. By the way, when I talk about the poem, that's nothing we can do anything about. I mean, that actually is something that happens far beyond another world. And we work with care where we are, and we are concerned with that thing over there, and our pathway, well, that thing. And we're really concerned with the world, with living. We're seeking a satisfaction of a certain intensity that will match our own physical makeups that have got really well. But then we can. Why dodge his term adoration? Because I share it.
It's true.
Seeking to come to the adoration in which something can exist. But I also recognize we also seek at times some anger. All of it. But that's because of the. If we abstract and say the object, how crude, it sounds like that it begins psychological. That's because of the person that is there, it's because of the flower that is there, it's because of the sky, because of the universe that, as Denise says, really is there every time your eyes can open, and how do you open them in this way?
Doesn't that sense, you use the word we, as though there were one set of we and another set of we, when you say like the root of that word, it can mean every we.
Every week, yeah.
So you can't possibly say that Alan is a man not of or of.
But I have not said at all. I said there was one thing true of Alan is that in addition to the fact that he's engaged like any human being and as every poet is in this, he has also become a person of the poem. So when we spoke of the poem, we could also speak of another Alan Ginsberg that must be strange indeed since Alan's a person. He's sitting here and he's just like all the rest of us. But he's also a legend. And that legend is, and I'm talking about the legend when I say that he's in the poem. Whitman was a legend, and if he is created a legend of this person. Now there are little, it's true, when you ask, well, isn't in a sense Williams in the poem, but Williams in the poem, for instance, is not really as powerful a figure as in the imagination, you really just come to Williams. Where actually what Alan launches in the imagination is something of great potency
in
his.
He becomes an instrument he becomes an instrument. Whereas Alan, remember, I found this just very briefly. I found, for example, there's only one poem that I ever wrote, like they say, in which I occur, as, and that's that one that goes. This is Robert Creeley or something. And it's a very curious feeling. You're not, and it wasn't a trick, so to speak, used simply to augment or to increase some sense of argument in the form of, I was suddenly in, I mean, I was in the fight. It was a very curious feeling.
Just a little bit aside, but there's something, a little technical point, is that most Indian poetry,
yeah.
Indian saint poetry, ends with the author of the poem saying, Kabir says this, after having written
yeah. the... That's the sense I'd actually had in mind.
After having written a setup like, this is the garden of love, not the home of the dear aunt, if you want to be admitted to Christ in your head, cut off your head and trample it on the ground. Kabir says this,
yeah.
if love were being sold in the marketplace, I would purchase it with my head.
Yeah.
So, the person speaking in time, so to speak, or in history, somehow, in Indian poetry, does finally unite with...
See, like I, John Watts, testify.
Kabir here is the signature. Kabir is not a person of the poem.
Well, but there is no longer any distinction between the two.
Oh, but
no,
I've been reading some Bengali poems where actually there are speakers. They're monologues. I mean, it's in quotes. And this is a... the speaker is a person of Hindu mythology. For instance, one of the friends of the bride of Krishna, speaking to her, warning her against the flute or whatever. And yet, at the end, the quotation marks close, and then it says. As I read them, it said so and so, who's the poet.
Yeah.
So it is really it's a convention. It's a way of putting
it. Like on the painting, so and so I made it.
The Lord. Or,
yeah.
In the Bible, for example, is the Lord? Is he a person of the poems?
He's the author. But this is very much like in the painting said so and so.
The Atman and the Brahma are one. The individual soul and the we. Or the universe are one. See, they make no distinction between the legendary personal and the complete place of everybody. No,
just one sense again.
There's no question of subjectivity there.
Or subject-object relational terms. Also, for example, as Phelps feels that we have gone beyond the issue of relations, that say that Fenelosa's essay, if you notice the Chinese written character, focused the attention on the whole relational structure of language and in turn on the whole relational structure of energy activity of any order, any instance. Olson has said that we seem to have come to a point where now Wordsworth's sense of emotion or some experience recollected in tranquility becomes more a place, in this sense we're talking of, than the relational insistence that, say, Fenelosa had located, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And that's an interesting sense.
Oh, I think I can get Wordsworth again. I have been gradually trying to reread Wordsworth. Actually, particularly since somebody in doing satire of me, and since I'm nice to universities, observed I was becoming the old gray poet or something, and meaning put me down, so immediately I started trying to see what was in Wordsworth. But what was in Wordsworth? I did not follow along the line of the things that were often important, but great, marvelous things in Wordsworth were the skaters, and where the skaters circle a star. I really, in a very late poem of H.D., she says, was there anything in my, and she's saying it really of her life, but she's thinking of Peirce's poems, was there ever anything other than the sand, the edge of the sea, and the stars? Now this is a cosmic, not psychic reality. I mean, when you think out intensely psychologically, when my feeling is the most real thing, but I'm not saying no, not to say this, because these are all These are all realities that were described, and how extreme it can go in the other direction, or how to Wordsworth, certainly his feeling is part of the real Wordsworthian thing, but this other part we're talking about today, the things that are in the poem, the scenes, that in the midst of a person to whom the very fact that he felt this was terribly important, we see without even his feeling is there, we know, but sharply, all for us, we see, or in Alan's, in those diaries of Alan's, seeing the snow and a single footstep on the Riverside Drive, these seem to me lasting things. They enter the poem like our old man that you met on, because they're that intensely seen.
But with me, the scene is as if Alan has embraced me. I'm inside the scene, not just, I don't know, it seems a very great distinction between the four of you and Alan.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we're all looking for the same.
Well, I think what the sense of, when I first read Whitman, I remember I was frightened by the presence, the intensity or the clarity of his presence. And as you say, when he literally says, touch me, I touch and I touch you, or you who hold this book, hold me. This was first of all, a terrifying proposition for me, you know. But then, so that partly Alan invites, as I cannot invite you, you know. I can say, all I can say is I am here. And then Alan goes beyond that, you see, at least in this character, to feel your presence.
So. It seems to me that what Alan put together is sort of the same idea that he did, which is when there's a visual line between the aspects, we're one is more involved.
Yeah.
But Whitman says, I celebrate myself and sing myself. Or I celebrate myself and sing myself. But what I shall assume, you shall assume.
That's
rightly gone.
I love that.
What I am talking about, you can talk about. Not your different self and my different self.
But
every atom of me, as it belongs to you, which, what he's saying is that the self there is ultimately the same.
Yeah.
He's not talking about his, what would be called the separated off self. He's talking about that person's body who is existing in the same place as your person's body.
Well, the strain in my own sense, you see, it comes again, that poem, The Door, where it becomes, I will go on talking forever, I will never get there.
Yeah.
Where I'm really separated in the here and there context.
Well, my sense that everything in the universe will have gotten to be a bodhisattva before I'll be nudged, because I'm not going to be...
The mind stays stuck in the door, you see. And as long as I is running on, I is not there.
Yeah.
No, but it's...
No, but it's
there.
I
think, John...
And even amongst you, that there's a difference. Some of you have...
Isn't,
some are one way and some aren't the other way.
Isn't there a clue in that thing of Pound's where he says, what thou lovest well shall not be reft from thee, what thou lovest well is thy true heritage?
Yeah.
In other words, my only feeling is, we were talking of this the last time and also in the class afterwards, the sense when you see something, literally, this sounds perhaps absurd, but when you see something of this order, and when you speak in it, not of it, but in it, in the context of it, as you are in it, you will. There is nothing in God's world that can prevent others from being there too, here. You see, there's nothing. There's no context that is sufficient to finally, literally, ultimately, kill that. Because again, I was thinking of Wins where he says, only the imagination is real. I have declared a time without end. If a man died, it's because death has first possessed his imagination. In this context, in other words, if you die in language, it's because you have death has literally possessed your imagination. I mean, I know that sense because I've had it as a qualification of myself. In other words, will what I say, quote, be understood, literally be heard? Am I speaking only to myself? You know, there was again in the poem For Love where it becomes the issue of here is tedium, despair, or whatever. You know, I say, all the issue of my person has become so tiresome. And I'm thinking, will this always be the prevention that I assume it to be? But I realize when I say something, I'll be heard. When I say something where I am, I'll be heard.
I was thinking of something perhaps a little more literal.
Well, this is very literal.
I see it that way. I was thinking perhaps a more physical sense. In other words, you're trying to take Charles Wilson and Maxim's poems. He's very central in the tone there.
But it isn't there. It's here. The poem is here.
Oh, but I don't think that one forgets that comes from a place.
Oh,
I mean,
New York.
You know, in fact, Patterson, one doesn't forget that however much Alan runs around the world.
The real place is there.
The real place is the body. And maybe people who are already in their body, therefore, are capable of settling down in one spot.
I think, though, this may be a key to what you meant about differences. The real place is where you are, but when you are in love or loving a thing or a place, then it becomes a real place in your body, and yourself really cease to be. In other words, you do surrogate to the place, to the loved person, to the loved things, your being, and say, I will take my being from them. So, and that is, by the way, why the great conflict for me is with my concept of almost an angel amour that compelled you to fall in love. Why is it you will disobey amour in the name of the things you love? And I've been frightened when I did it because I also have a very high concept of in other words, I will disobey the numinous in the name of things I love, and I will go in peril of my soul in the name of the things I love. And I know I will because I have disobeyed falling in love in the name of the things I love. And given myself over there and where I exist is just then an open question. And those things, by the way, include the poets that I call masters and then the poets that I have found that... And sometimes I think they're akin, but then I look and they're so different from me. How could they possibly... How do I name them kin? We are in a period of wide volition about the things we love. We're of our selection, they can be... It can go in time and in space, all
of them. Also, he said something very interesting about his life about Lustig and Maxim. He said that all the time he was writing his poems, he was not really possessed of or possessed by Glaucer. That he only realized himself in Glaucer and realized his living presence there and his living presence, or that they were all there together, only recently. And now that he feels that he has been born through, partly through all the work on the poem and through all the thinking and feeling in relation to Glaucer, his acceptance of it and his working from that normal place for so long a time, and 6 years or however long he's been of pain and separation from himself there and from Gloucester. It was only in the last year that he finally arrived in Gloucester. Yeah. And now he's left Gloucester because he was now there.
He's been there.
He's now going out into the world, partly because, you know, now that he is there, he wants...
I think earlier
you
had the sense I am caught in Gloucester, for example, where there's a very much a context of disorder.
And that may relate to something I kept talking about, which is one specific Maxim's letter 25 that he played me.
I think it's 27.
Where he stands up on the street in Gloucester and lifts his finger and says, I am here in Gloucester.
I have the sense that I am one with my skin.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Gloucester was just the name of...
Yeah, that's why I felt it.
This place that we are all in, one big place that we are all in. This is the locality, because it was just that locality.
So how do you mean going out into the world?
Well, if you are, come on, I mean, I'm going out, the glass is now enlarged.
Sam, if you're worrying whether you left the gas on at home, or if you have a sense of place that's constantly concerned with how you've dealt with it, or whether it's really there, or what is really there, you find your whole attention is caught in this will that wants to deal with things, remember, change, affect, find content in. I mean, all the issue of the daily, as we say, the daily. All the accumulations that wear us out, as Alan calls it. I mean, all the context of all the edge of arbitrariness that exists in our daily conduct or senses of being. Now, as long as Gloucester is that kind of place, you have to literally deal with it as a complex of records and where's so and so and what does this mean? Who is Frank Moore? It becomes the librarian, for example, is the key poem in that sense. Of this issue, of this flexure, this fluxion. But once, as Alan says, you are there, or are here, all this becomes, all this doesn't so much fade, but all this takes place, as opposed to having to be thought about.
Oh, I know about the who is. Who is I, Maximus?
Yeah. Someone, for example.
You know, I mean, I'm into this business about the voice and the poem. Yeah. We are clear, Allen Ginsberg's Allen Ginsberg. And by the way, I do. I certainly have poems that, like Alan, I am Robert Duncan. I have poems that, like the ones, the presentations of my mother, where I give a little autobiography in prose first, and there I'm like, to me, I'm not a person in the poem, I'm a person in a novel. I mean, I'm a person in a series of data that are pertinent to the song that then is sung, and the song, that I is very different. That I is not, but who is I, Maximus? I, Maximus, is certainly, if you sit down with it, not Charles. It includes Charles, sure. I mean, he's the data point of I, Maximus, but I, Maximus is not the great Atman or the great over-self. I, Maximus, is a specific person speaking from Gloucester. And who is a Gloucester Newman, and but also has other localities in history. It's Maximus of Tyre, for one thing, once Charles was going to see it that way, it means the most. But a lot of different. What if he started I, Charles Olson? This would be very different from I, Maximus.
But it would have come to the same.
No.
Charles pointed out that the one aspect of our being that stays located is this name. I mean,
yeah.
Charles Olson stays located in the sense that the being.
And Maximus is a location, entire other location. Taken in the form.
We were speaking about this in the class apropos women, and the, for example, when you marry, your name is suddenly somebody, they do something with it, which is upsetting, you know, I should think. I wouldn't want to do it to mine.
That's what else to say.
If you keep your arm too, then you get past it. You can only keep your arm if your government does something.
In this, which is called the Kali Yuga by the Indians, or the cycle of time, which is winding up towards, was the lowest point in all the cycles, according to their myth that we are in. They say that it's possible to reach the self by intelligence, or by the intellect, or even by meditation, or even by physical yoga, that we are so sunk in illusion that the only that there is only one key left, which is faith. And so what they say is, choose any image of divinity that your heart desires, any at all, like whether it be Kali or Krishna or Radha, Krishna's girlfriend, or even yourself, your own image, and worship that, and repeat that name continuously. Repeat the mantra, a mantra or a little verbal formula connected with that, and that any one of these roads will finally lead to the self, or towards that image becoming real, let's say Krishna appearing before you, or Krishna entering into you, or Radha entering into you. What was all that I meant by saying, if you had started with Charles, I Charles, or I Maximus, it would have...
No, but you're talking about the soul's experience, but we're talking about the person and the poem.
And so the world of illusion,
I mean, all right, but you're saying start, but then where is the person who starts with, I met a little, how's it go, your misty morning man? can't find it. Inside, I just keep wanting that again. Just keep wanting it.
It landed.
Well, the person who's reciting that is a man in leather. Well, who's the I then that met him?
The same thing that himself.
I remember in this class the other day, I found myself finally led by the neck until I was saying that the content of a poem is utterly secondary.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think later, what did I mean by that? Because I certainly didn't mean what it appeared to me. But I was trying to say that I used as an instance the fact that when teaching this class last year, a freshman class in English 200, I found, for example, that I became very nervous about Milton because I didn't understand clearly what he was saying anyhow, and then I had the further problem of finding it restricted to my own senses of life, and so I was very concerned about the whole issue of the content with reference to these students, and so I was worrying about it, whether they would understand the theology and this kind of stuff. So I was prepared, in effect, to have a great disappointment. I thought everyone would go groaning through this poem of such sections as this from Paradise Lost, and I found that this wasn't at all the case, that actually the poem seems to have been a place for many people who read it. Obviously not because they quote, agreed or disagreed with the theology or even understood it. It was literal ground that they stood on for the time of reading. It was a place for them. So I think in that sense, I was trying to make a distinction between the sense of the place a poem is, in no sentimental context whatsoever, and the meaning, what you can take away from the place.
Yes.
You know, the bucket of blueberries you can bring home.
Wordsworth said, language is not the dress but the incarnation of thoughts.
Yeah.
So that is to say, it becomes flesh. And when a thing is flesh, you do not agree or disagree with it.
It
yeah. is.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. So the content, in this niggly sense, is something I've always felt...
You
don't understand it in the sense that it's this way or that way.
Yeah, and this is surely what you're talking about when you say that the poem is not a descriptive act.
Yeah.
It's not ideas translated into language. It is the thing.
Yeah.
It itself.
And so what I meant about the IMAXismus, in the Oprah self, Mae West, Charles Olson, Hitler, any existing human being, or what I call the atom, is one. But in the poem, consequently, it is extremely important that it is I Maximus and not I Charles Olson, because it's just that distance. It is I Maximus that is incarnate then in the poem. And just as in Mae West's what called projection, Charles, and that's the term Charles has of a project, that's what it means by the projective and the voice, it is that, for all of the fact that in the over self, she's at one with every human being. If you were a biologist of what a human being is like, you would have to take all of these as examples of what human beings have been like. So that you find yourself in that generality, without talking about over selves or something, having to deal with each one of these. But it's also now science has shifted from wanting to look at such generalities and lumping them all together to realize that they're absolute particulars and individual existences, and that's what ecology is, looking right what it is that's happening. Pound sent out a you must look, watch what is happening, and that meant to me at that point, you must watch what is happening right where you are on the line. And you know no generalities, you know just there, and that's your business, and that's where you're composing.
Not as ideas, but in things.
But you know, but if I said it, you know, what I'm wondering about is not the arrangements of words you have just made, but what is the affect of feeling that you attach to those.
But I'm talking not about the arrangements of words you made, but what Williams, he talks not about the arrangement of words I made, he says about the words that came to me out of the air, not the ones he made. I don't believe I make an arrangement of words. And when I see what I feel is a made arrangement of words, I immediately feel, now how in the world will you explain to them to please listen and have things come to them?
First,
absolutely.
Having things come to them, Maximus of Tyre, or you know that writer, that man who Charles has the name of, he, in his history, or talking of the worship of Zeus, you see, the cave, tells how this one particular man, you see, tells how it works, the mechanics of how things come to one, tells how the man goes to the cave, you see, and in a miraculous sleep, you see, in dreams, the God or that power of the psyche, you see, whatever that God has come from act to myth, into the man's head, you see, and he gets his vision or revelation in dreams, you see, he wakes up, walks out of the cave, comes back to town and says, people, this is the way I saw it. And this is what Charles worked in. I think by his own admission to someone, or I mean, he had a dream himself one night, you see. I mean, to be able to connect himself to Maximus, he had to have the same general...
This I thought.
It's a cold-blooded thing that I'm sort of talking about here, but the way it is, you see. And if Maximus himself of Tyre, the real man, the man that we sometimes don't see in that poem, you see, reiterated the same thing in general of a certain mechanics that Charles is doing, reiterating the dream, or that which comes to you from the cave, and the cave would be the beast.
So the testimony is always part of it. The testimony to what you saw.
Yes, but you know, like not this old common sight of look.
Yeah.
But the thing of the man who goes to the cave is considered a marvelous act that anyone would go to, I think it was the cave of Zeus, or the birthplace of Zeus himself in the old Egyptian cave, you see. It was later not used as the worshipful, but it became the most ancient shrine to Zeus, you see, this boy, whoever was born. And if this man, this mortal, would go there and sleep a whole night, now, whether it was bears or whether it was Zeus, whatever it was, whatever power that the man had
to obey,
he invoked upon and invoked from through that dream of the fear, as religion goes.
Is right on this thing. For example, this winter, I think it was, some friends in Seattle who were working with the Tibetans who were there, one of the older men, I'm not clear as to what literally his title would be, but in any case, at one point, during the last winter, he'd retired, in this very literal sense, to a cave north of Seattle, where he was doing just what you're saying. And I thought, well, here are all these people in Seattle, so to speak, going about their daily business with such senses of seriousness, and yet here's this man who's qualifying all their reality. And if they had the actual sense of what he's doing,
think of this too,
they would find nothing else to do.
Charles, in a very fantastically beautiful sense, is maintaining himself not only as the Maximus of Tyre, but the man, that ancient man back in a cave.
That's how is it now?
Coming to knowledge of in dreams, or when he has no what you would call knowledge, you see, when he looks, he doesn't see. But,
well, that sense, as he says, just last week, 3,000 years ago, or 3 million years ago, whatever.
You get the man, I mean, you see Charles in the flesh walking around sweating and dancing and everything, and then you look at him as the man somewhere else, too, wow, at the same time, no matter what kind of thing he's in.
Well, I remember Robert in a conversation again earlier saying any of us can do it, in the sense that we can move through any context of reality if we oh, that sense I got way back when I read that statement, how is it far if you think it? Which then you translate think into a wider, well, not a wider, but literally a less mental context. How can you be other than where you are? And for what good reason? I think that we've got to go east.
Yeah.
And then remember, Friday we'll meet at Buchanan 104, and so on. And tonight, Margaret will read very, very long.
Yeah.